Good morning. Before we begin, let's take a moment to appreciate ourselves and one another for getting up and out on a rainy Sunday morning. May this time be one in which you connect with your heart, connect with one another, and experience the sacred. We invite you to take this moment to be centered, to connect with your breath, to connect with the seat beneath you, to connect with your hopes and your aspirations. If you feel moved, you also may take time to light a candle to focus special attention on a hope or memory. For our prayer this morning, I've chosen one by Kabir, who is a 15th century Indian mystic and one of the world's greatest poets. He is often claimed to be Hindu by the Hindus and Muslim by the Muslims because of the way his songs infuse the mysticism of the Upanishads with the Sufi's ecstatic love. But it would be truer to say he was too universal to be confined to one tradition, so I thought he'd be perfect for this morning. The name of the prayer is Weaving Your Name. I weave your name on the loom of my mind, to make my garment when you come to me. My loom has 10,000 threads to make my garment when you come to me. The sun and moon watch while I weave your name. The sun and moon hear while I count your name. These are the wages I get by day and night to deposit in the lotus bank of my heart. I weave your name on the loom of my mind to clean and soften 10,000 threads and to comb the twists and knots of my thoughts. No more shall I weave a garment of pain, for you have come to me, drawn by my weaving, ceaselessly weaving your name on the loom of my mind. We'll be a land building up ancient cities, raising up devastations from old, restoring ruins of generations. Oh, we'll build a land of people so bold. Come, build a land where sisters and brothers, anointed by God, may then create peace, where justice shall roll down like waters and peace like an ever-flowing stream. Friends, the impossible will take a little while. I take the title of our theme today from a wonderful book by Paul Loeb called The Impossible Will Take a Little While, A Citizen's Guide to Hope in a Time of Fear. I wanted to make sure I gave credit where credit's due. I didn't make up that. And to put a plug in for this book, it's a wonderful compendium of essays that are hope-filled and inspiring. The impossible will take a little while. So what do we do in the meantime? That's the question. In Christian theology, we have a notion called realized eschatology. And eschatology, eschaton, refers to the end time, the time when we will be a land that builds up cities, not devastate them, that will take pain and transform it into hope, where brothers and sisters will live together and justice and peace will reign, the eschaton. And realized eschatology is the idea that we live today as if the eschaton has in fact arrived. I often like to talk about Austin being a city that really understands realized eschatology. And here's why. When you come to the Austin airport, you see a sign that says, the live music capital of the world. And see, I'm glad you laughed, because some people I talk to in Austin, when I say that, they don't think that's funny. They're like, and? And I go on to say, well, you know, Austin isn't even one of the three biggest cities in Texas, not to mention the world. And they're like, so? We're the live music capital of the world, period, end of question. That is living as if something's true until it is. That's the practicing realized eschatology. I want to thank you very much for letting me be here. The last time I was here, I was working with an organization called the Texas Freedom Network, and I was speaking about the efforts of that organization to counter the religious right with an alternative moral vision, and that was a number of years ago. So again, it's an example of the fact that the impossible will take a little while. I'm not sure how much progress we've made in those intervening years, but it is good to be here, and I want to especially thank you as a congregation for having been so supportive of the Austin Area Interreligious Ministries. We go by AIM for short. AAIM is an organization that has been around in some form or another for 65 years, and it began way back in the 40s when what was then basically just Protestant pastors decided to come together across their profound theological differences, Methodists and Presbyterians and Lutherans, and work together for the common good and to get to know each other for the sake of the city, thinking that if the people of faith here knew one another and connected with one another and worked together, that the city would be stronger. And today, we are the most comprehensive interfaith organization in Central Texas, and we bring together Buddhists and Baha'is and Christians and Muslims and Jews and Hindus and Unitarians to work for the common good. And we do a balance of community building activities. We do an interfaith worship service. We convene religious leaders. We have dialogue groups. So as an effort to kind of do interreligious bridge building and dialoguing, and then we do ministries. We repair houses that are owned by folks who can't afford to make their home repairs. We do English as a second language for refugees who are resettled here because they are fleeing religious and political persecution in their homeland. We train religious leaders to respond to victims of trauma and disaster in ways that do not proselytize or do not impose their own particular religious beliefs on the victims, but instead provide a compassionate presence. We trained over 100 religious leaders from the different traditions in Austin 2 weeks before Katrina hit, and many of those people who attended that training were down at the convention center or ministering to people in their own faith community who felt traumatized just by watching the television, not to mention having been an evacuee themselves. Donna Howard, who is a member of y'all's group, was served on the board, and so we are particularly thankful to this congregation for her. She held this organization together for many months. And it is congregations like yours who make the AIMS work possible. And I am from Austin, but was serving a church up in Lawrence, Kansas, of all places, but was so excited to return home to my home city and serve as the executive director of this incredible organization. So if we're supposed to live as if it is until it is, this end time, this moment when we will be building up cities and not destroying them, and peace and justice will reign. If we're supposed to do that, how do we do it? Is it just sort of a? Are we just deluding ourselves by thinking, you know, well, I'm just going to make this world pretty, no matter what, no matter how bad it really is. I'm just going to pretend it's good. That's not what we're talking about. Well, it's not what I'm talking about this morning. It's nice to have those delusions, but not probably very effective. And so I would suggest that the challenge is to figure out how to look at the pain of this world and still, in the midst of that, practice a discipline of living as if peace and justice are right here and now. It is so easy to get caught up in the criticism and the negativity of the state of the world. And so easy to just imagine that the by and by will never come. But the hope is that there is a way to be in the world where we can actually, in the moment, experience the peace and justice and compassion and love that we hope will someday reign. And I want to share in sort of that vein a quote by Martin Luther King, because it's so easy for us, coming off of Martin Luther King Day, to worship the legend instead of really live his dream. But I think he offers us a philosophical approach, actually, to living in the moment as if the peace that we long for is, in fact, here. And he writes, he's really, you know, a philosopher about the nature of reality. He grounded his work for racial justice in a conviction about the way the world actually is. And let me tell you what he says. We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, clothed in a single garment of destiny. I'm a Presbyterian, and we like to talk a lot about predestination, and so that particularly appeals to me, but that's really not what he's saying. So I'm going to read that again. We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, clothed in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. I can never be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be. So kind of get busy. I hope you're paying attention. Because I want to be what I ought to be. So I need y'all to be what you ought to be. I can never be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be. And you can never be what you ought to be until I am what I ought to be. This is the interrelated structure of reality. This is the interrelated structure of reality. So if indeed reality is structured such that we are woven together in a single garment of destiny, unable actually to be independent of one another, then surely it must be possible in moments, however fleeting, to experience that peace and justice that we hope will one day reign. Just to know and feel it in your bones that no matter how isolated and divided we feel, we are actually one in one together, inescapably so. And this single garment of destiny, may it be a garment of righteousness and justice and hope. That's the idea. That's the discipline of realized eschatology. Knowing that that single garment is constantly being woven, like the prayer I read, Kabir weaving that garment in his mind. And that it's up to us to make sure that that garment gets woven in a way where the knots and the tangles get undone for the sake of peace and love, and that we can experience it now. We've had an experience of this just very recently, I think, just a great example of how this inescapable nature of reality works. And that was the UT National Football Championship. Because I think you would have to agree that for UT to win that game, Vince Young needed to reach his full potential. Would you say? Surely. And for Vince Young to reach his full potential, UT had to decide that it was going to even be open to African Americans playing football, which was very late to do. I mean, my gosh, had UT not gotten itself together, Vince Young could have been playing for USC. And for Vince Young to be playing at UT, Martin Luther King had to march, as did many other civil rights leaders, as did everybody who finally took a stand for dignity of all people. So for the fans of the University of Texas, and I'm not assuming everybody hears that, but for those of you who were there, for them to experience one of the probably most profound religious experiences that they will ever have, for them to connect with the inescapable mutuality of reality, Vince Young and Martin Luther King, everybody, you see how it all connected. Now you think I'm kidding, but it's really true. I mean, that is really true. We wouldn't have won had Vince Young not been playing. Vince Young wouldn't have been playing had Martin Luther King not marched, and those fans wouldn't have been as happy. That's sort of a silly example, but the principle is there. We have no idea how many of those little connections are happening all the time. And if we can make sure the thread that we're weaving in this single garment of destiny is one in which we are convicted of the fact that right here and now we can know peace, right here and now we can bring justice, not only in some end time. We can know we can do it now, and at the same time honor that it's not yet arrived. It's that both and. I want to share with you a letter that the Austinary Interreligious Ministries developed out of a series of clergy gatherings that we've been having at Houston Tillotson to talk about how we in Austin can transcend the divide of I-35. The highway is somewhat of a symbol of the racial and economic disparities in our community, and we've been convening religious leaders there at Houston Tillotson, just east of I-35, to talk about how do our own religious traditions call us to respond to racial and economic disparities, and then to kind of take stock. Have we been living up to what those traditions ask us to do? And if we haven't, what should we do about it? There was a wonderful moment that it's kind of one of these where the holy breaks in, not quite maybe at the level of a UT national championship, but something like wherever for just a second you experience this beautiful nature of reality that we want so much, hunger so much for. And that was when a local imam, Imam Razi, who's been passionate about translating Islam for folks, particularly after 9/11, for the wider Austin community. And he said, you know what? He stood up. After we'd been meeting for about an hour, he said, you know what? After 9/11, people in this community really embraced the local Muslims. They came and surrounded our worship places, our mosques and masjids, and made sure that those places were safe from attack. They came and came to our houses to make sure we didn't feel alienated or alone. They escorted us to the grocery store when we were afraid to get out. People made us feel like we belonged and like we were going to be safe. And he said, you know what? We ought to be doing that for everybody in Austin who feels attacked and alienated and isolated. We ought to be doing that for the African Americans in our community. We ought to be doing that for the Latinos. And all of a sudden, the entire room, you could just feel a shift. Because what had before been conservative Christians and progressive Christians and Jews and Muslims and Wiccans, what had before been that became a garment of religious leaders who were ready to recognize that together we are stronger and we are more of a benefit to this city than apart. And that small actions can make just an extraordinary difference in the fabric of this city. So one small action that has emerged out of those gatherings is an open letter to the city of Austin that is signed by over 100 religious leaders. And in your principles, you talk about, I've got this off the website, how that if there is ever to be a better world, people of widely differing beliefs will have to help each other build it. Amen. That's what I say. Well, this is definitely 100 or so, now more actually, because people keep signing on, of widely diverse religious beliefs are represented in the people who signed on to this letter. And I just want to share with you a couple of phrases from it. It's really a mea culpa letter from the religious leaders to this community saying, you know what, we really haven't stepped up and helped foster mutuality, or foster at least, since a mutuality always exists, foster an awareness of the mutuality that is inescapable, foster an awareness that this city, as powerful as that divide is, that we actually are interconnected. So that this is their sort of mea culpa letter, and it starts like this. It says, we, the undersigned, are religiously diverse and yet morally united. Our common hope is simply that every person in Austin should have access to a decent, sustainable quality of life. We join in this endeavor with all those in Austin who work for the common good. They go on to say, as religious leaders, we do not claim to be policy experts, but we do claim the power and authority of religious traditions that have much to say about quality of life and justice. Our traditions acknowledge that human beings cannot be reduced to statistics and that their plights must not be ignored. Throughout Austin's history, religious leaders have been on the front lines of addressing social and economic issues. The moral voice of religious leaders is essential to challenge the dehumanizing forces that undercut community well-being. And here's the mea culpa. We acknowledge that in recent years, we have often failed to collectively raise our voices or initiate a public conversation on issues of basic quality of life. We also acknowledge that the broadening religious diversity in our community poses new challenges as we strive to come together across our profound theological and religious differences. However, it has never been more important for us to transcend our divisions to find common ground. These leaders that signed this letter are committed to coming together to address the quality of life for African Americans and for all people in this city, to doing it from the perspective of a faith community, whichever one they might represent, that says human beings cannot be reduced to statistics, and that the quality of life of one person is intimately connected to the quality of life of another. Realized eschatology, living as if something is until it is. That's what this letter, to my mind, represents. And as the director of AIM, I'm committed to making sure that the support from congregations like you gets leveraged in such a way that these issues that have plagued our city for far too long get addressed constructively and with hope and love, not anger and bitterness. I want to close with a quote from Desmond Tutu in an essay he writes, No Future Without Forgiveness. He says, there is a movement. I like to think of the Austin Area Interreligious Ministries as an interreligious movement, he says. There is a movement to reverse the awful centrifugal force of alienation, brokenness, division, hostility, and disharmony. God has set in motion a centripetal process, a moving toward harmony, goodness, peace, and justice, a process that removes barriers. Perhaps this letter is just one step in that process, that centripetal process. He lifts up Jesus as a symbol, Jesus on the cross as a symbol that everyone is coming together. But I'm going to read this as if it was this light, that your symbol that's so beautiful, this eternal flame that shines equally on all people. This flame embraces everyone in a cosmic embrace so that all people, everyone and everything belong. None is an outsider. All are insiders. All belong. There are no aliens. All belong in the one family, God's family, the human family. There is no doubt in my mind that this congregation is part of that centripetal process. And it is extremely important to AIM and to this city that you continue to witness to that vision that religious differences are assets, not weaknesses. That the different perspectives that people bring help us be stronger, make sure that our garment of destiny is one that's woven tight. And so I thank you. And I pray that as we move forward, we do so with hope and vision, trusting that just like Austin is the live music capital of the world, this little city could also become the interfaith collaboration city of the world. It could be true. In fact, it may already be true. Either way, I'm going to live as if it is until it is. Amen.